Yeah, speaking of languages, if you've ever had to communicate in a language other than your own, boy, you know how valuable interpreters can be. That can be a stressful job, but it's also far more than just translating words. A good interpreter really is a cultural bridge, and it's a craft that benefits from study. Summer intensive interpreter training program underway now at the University of Hawaii. Noe and I got to sit down with the center's director, Lucia Arnada, and James Nolan, an instructor and interpreter at the UN for 29 years. We started off talking about the distinction between translation and interpretation.
Translation is in writing, interpretation is verbal, oral. And as a translator, your work is very much like that of a researcher or a detective. You may have to go through a dozen dictionaries to find the right word. My favorite anecdote is about Martin Luther's translation of the Bible, where he boasts that he spent an entire week searching for one word. We interpreters don't have a week for one word. We have a split second for one word, okay, right. If we're lucky.
Uh-huh.
So that gives you an idea. We in simultaneous interpreting, you interpret together with the speaker. The speaker is speaking. You're interpreting what he's saying as he speaks. Right. So it's an instant reaction.
And in a situation such as at the United Nations, a lot of times there's emotion. There is so much more than simply language. How do you work with that? And what is the training?
There is emotion in everything everybody says all the time, not just at the United Nations. Mm. On the contrary, people at the United Nations tend to moderate their emotions to some extent. Diplomats don't tend to get carried away with what they say. Many people do get very emotional with what they say. That makes it a little easier, the fact that we seldom have to deal with strong emotional speeches at the UN. But when you do get a strong emotional speech, there are two theories. There are two schools of thought among interpreters. If someone is speaking very, very fast in a very complicated register, saying things that are difficult to grasp, difficult to follow, in a very emotional tone, some interpreters believe that it's okay to simply translate the words, keep up with the speaker as best you can without necessarily putting all that emotion into your voice. Because in a way, it's superfluous. The speaker himself is conveying the emotion. So it's not really necessary for you to be indulging in a lot of play acting. The mm-hmm. speaker himself is doing that for you. What the audience needs from you as an interpreter is just the meaning of the words. So that's one school of thought. The other school of thought is that if you do try to put yourself in the speaker's shoes and reflect his emotion, it's actually easier for you to get it out correctly mm-hmm. because the emotion helps you to convey what the speaker is conveying. I belong to that latter school of thought. So for me, it has always been something of a challenge and something of a pleasure to deal with a very emotional speaker. And I've had to deal with some very emotional ones, like Hugo Chavez, for example, from Venezuela, who were both interesting, fascinating as from a technical point of view in terms of interpreting them correctly, and challenging in terms of the emotions that they were expressing. There's the other extreme of emotion, too. There's having to interpret the speech of someone who is recounting something terrible that happened to him, like the victim of a human rights violation. And I have had to do a few of those when I worked for the human rights bodies in Geneva, testimony by people who had been tortured, for example. That's also very emotional in the sense that the speaker is so deeply aggrieved that he can hardly get it out, what he's trying to say, but you feel the emotion that he's feeling, and that makes it harder. I think that kind of situation is probably the hardest for an interpreter to deal with, where you have to convey something of that speaker's feeling without him actually expressing it directly, if you know what I mean.
A lot of people maybe are bilingual or trilingual, etc., but what really then makes a good interpreter?
Very few people are truly bilingual. Most people have a dominant language and a less dominant language. And their dominant language is the one in which they express themselves 90% of the time. And as soon as they're under some kind of stress, if you're on the phone and have to explain something in a hurry, you may think that you can do it in French, but if your French breaks down, you lapse immediately back into English. And that's the language you use to express something complicated or difficult or emotional or whatever it is, your dominant language, okay? Uh-huh. So very few people are truly bilingual. If you are to some extent bilingual, it's a very helpful starting point for becoming an interpreter because you don't have to spend years acquiring the B language. We interpreters have an A language, a B language, and a C language, okay? I, for example, at the UN, I'm classified as having an English A, Spanish C, and French C. Because those are the languages from which I interpret. If you have a Spanish or French B, then you also interpret into those two languages, okay? But that means you have to do more work, more of the time.
Is this the kind of thing the students are thinking, Lucia?
Students are very struggling because it's not easy. Their brains are, they get very tired. We were driving over here and James was saying how difficult, how tiring it is for the students after now in the fifth week of the 6 weeks and training. Students, they feel their brains, they've learned a lot, but they feel like they're burning, right? So much not only information that they're learning, but learning how to concentrate, the memory skills, the note taking, and it's the use of the brain at a 100, well, you try to make it at 100% because it's so important. You're the bridge for another person, and so you really have to take your job seriously. This is like conference interpreting. It's a high stake, the subjects that you're talking about and people and countries, politics.
Are there a lot of jobs out there?
Well, actually, right now, it's one of the professions that's growing till 2029, I think. It's supposed to grow like 27%. So in the humanities, it's one of the professions that's growing the most. There's a lot of interest. And in Hawaii, we need it a lot because of the community interpreting. We have a lot of Chakis. We have a lot of Marshallese in the courts that don't know English. And so they're they don't have anybody to help them with their cases at court. And so they need an interpreter, and there aren't enough interpreters in those Pacific Island languages.
What are the commonalities that no matter what the languages involved are, the commonalities of interpretation?
Well, maybe one of them is the cultural. You have to have a cultural sensibility to both situations. It's not only not knowing that in one language a spring might be a summer, and so that the differences in translation and interpreting might be different, but knowing where your position is as an interpreter and knowing that you can't take center stage. There are differences because in Arabic countries, there are certain things you can do. And there, in the United States, there might be things that you cannot do. In Pacific Islanders, they consider death in a very different way than we do in the United States. And so how to make that come across in a medical interpreting situation can be kind of tricky if you have to learn what their culture, the cultural differences are.
And here in Hawaii, we have such a mix of cultures and not the usual cultures that Americans mix with. We're going to have to wrap it up soon. But James, could you just tell me, what do you see as challenges ahead maybe for this field?
It depends on which way the course of events goes in the world. That, in turn, determines which languages become the leading languages of diplomacy, politics, culture, et cetera, et cetera. At this moment in history, English is slightly giving way to Mandarin in terms of the numbers of speakers and the spread of speakers and the importance of the languages as cultural conveyors. So I think we can expect probably Chinese Mandarin to become increasingly important. The other major development is the introduction of digitalization into the world of interpreting as it's being introduced into everything else in life. There is, unfortunately, a tendency to think that translation and interpretation is something that can be done by computers. The truth is it can't. Human thought is vastly more complicated than anything any computer can do, and human sensibilities are something that a computer cannot even begin to properly imitate, although many attempts are being made to devise gadgets, if I may call them that, which sound like they're convincingly translating
humanoid.
Something or other, humanoid, if you wish, yeah. I'm afraid that's all science fiction. There isn't really such a thing as a translating computer or an interpreting computer, although people will sell you even glasses that supposedly pick up on what somebody else is saying and display it for you on the inside of the... People will sell you just about anything.
Gee, they could sell me that.
But no, it can't be done, not yet. Maybe sometime in the far distant future, but for the moment, my job is secure.
Oh, fascinating. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you, Luthea.
It's been
great having
you.
41 students from all over the world are taking part in the Summer Intensive Interpreter Training Program at UH. James Nolan is an instructor there, as well as an author, and was an interpreter at the UN for nearly 30 years. Luthea Aranda is a professor of Spanish at UH and the director of the Center for Interpretation and Translation Studies.